What I love about this passage in terms of the unseen realm is this context of persecution, this context of suffering and poverty, particularly for believers, but will be other people as well in that situation. What the truth is that God is bringing through this revelation to John is that behind the scenes, God and Jesus are completely sovereign and in charge in a way that is absolutely mind-blowing and extraordinary. We cannot understand or grasp. It's almost like headquarters, the HQ behind something, is this is what's really going on. And if you look at the three contexts, it's almost like, to back up that argument, those three contexts with Moses, they just come out of slavery, they battled against the big principality of the age, which was Pharaoh of the Egyptians. Pharaoh was God in Egyptology. He was God, Ra, the son of God. And they just defeated the 10 plagues, a big theme all the way through Revelation, which represented different gods in the Egyptian culture. They'd been torn down. God had been revealed as God. And then he reveals himself, just a little taste to Moses and the elders of his glory and his honour. And then you move to Isaiah, who is a prophet to the kings of Judah after Judah and Israel had split. And it says, in the year King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord. Basically saying there are kings, they will rise and fall. There are empires, they will rise and fall. There is a certain amount of dominion given to men, given to cultures, given to mindsets. But they rise and fall. This king, Uzziah, has died. There's going to be a new one that goes on the throne. But actually behind the scenes there's one king, always. There always was and there always will be. And that king is forever being continually worshipped. And then you skip through to Ezekiel. By this time, Judah had sadly continually violated this covenant. And so a bit like if someone commits perpetual adultery, Jesus, a husband, will let their wife go. And there was perpetual spiritual adultery through idolatry of the other gods rather than the true worship of him. So finally, after hundreds of years of warning, Judah, God's sort of chosen treasured possession, is released into exile under the Babylonians. And Ezekiel is part of this process. In fact, he goes to exile before they fully destroyed the temple. And Ezekiel's one of the waves that goes over. And in that context of absolute desolation, so Ezekiel, his whole life would have been trained to be a priest. And he was just on the brink of doing that. And he was married. And everything was shattered. In fact, God even said, your wife's going to die because she is the love of your life, and my wife, you know, in terms of the people of God, has just been desolated. So your wife's going to die is a prophetic act of how I feel about the desolation of my people in the temple. So Ezekiel's there, and then he just encounters the sovereign God of the nations and the empires, the God who always will and always is and always will be. And it's this extraordinary insight in the context of real desolation of what truth is. And there are other little bits, actually, which I've written here, which I think are really helpful. So the elders fall down, bringing it back. Now we've had the Greek Empire. So I've touched upon, we had Egypt, then Assyria, and then Babylon. And in between, then there was Persia, then there's Greece. And under Greece is a very famous emperor called Alexander the Great. And I read this in Paul Langham's Understanding Revelation, which was a fantastic insight I didn't know. The elders cast their crowns before the throne. I always thought that just meant we're gifted, we have authority, we reign, and we cast our crowns. But actually, apparently, that was instituted by Alexander the Great, is when anyone who would come to him had to cast their crown before him. And so what John is directly speaking into is, actually, there is one king we cast our crown before. We don't need to cast our crown anywhere else. There's one place we lay down who we are, our gifts, our identity, and we say, you actually deserve all my worship. And then separately, and part of the Roman Empire, they're now in the Roman Empire, after the Greek Empire collapsed. There's this phrase, you are worthy, and that's directly linked to the liturgy of emperor worship in ancient Rome. And again, John is recovering that for true worship. So there were all these sort of intimations of how people culturally worshipped gods or the emperor or the culture of the day, and he's recovering them all and saying, actually, there is one God who is worthy of worship. He's the God, he's sovereign over nations, empires, time, history, space, and he alone we worship. And there's that sense that in the middle of the most desolate circumstances, worship is true and real. What we think is true and real, or how we feel, isn't actually true or real. Worship is true or real. And I love Bill Johnson's quote. I just find this incredibly helpful. Worship restores perspective. So actually what this is trying to do is not saying this is just happening in the unseen realm, but this is actually truth and reality. And everything else will be sifted according to that. So everything is sifted to the extent it comes in surrender to the Lordship of Jesus Christ, whether it's the whole mindsets, cultural ways of doing things, or my own personal emotions. Doesn't matter what level. There is the truth and reality at the centre of everything is worship of Jesus. And everything will come into surrender and reality and realignment with that. And we would do well if we come into agreement with that now. Now, what we've been looking at in the last two chapters particularly is who we're designed to be. And repeatedly in the seven letters to the churches in chapters 2 and 3, the one who overcomes, the one who overcomes, the one who is victorious. From that Greek word Nike, which the trainer is exactly the same word for that trainer brand, Nike, N-I-K-E, the Greek goddess of victory. Paul takes that in some of his writings as well. In the letters, he takes it and he says, you are overcomers. And what I love is in Revelation 2 and 3, it's saying those who overcome will inherit everything. Will inherit a new name. You'll inherit eternity. You'll inherit goodness. You'll inherit a connectedness with God. You'll inherit authority. You'll inherit everything. And then in chapter 4, it's like, how do you overcome? You come into realignment that worship is the centre of everything. And that is the key to victory. That is the key to overcoming, worshipping the Lord for who he is. So there are a number of ways that we can move away from that. We can, out of fear of man, worship what other people worship. We can worship cultural idols. I think one of the cultural idols is our interpretation of the American dream in this country. I think there is a Western dream that if you have a particular kind of house and car and lifestyle, then somehow you've made it. That is an act of idolatry, because that is not true or real. That can be destroyed within a second. It's not a given that that will last even for another day. But this is true and real, because it will last forever. And so there may be concerns about all sorts of things that are not true or real, and this is true or real. And the way we come as whole beings into truth and reality is through worship, and we become overcomers is through that. It is the absolute key to victory. And the other really exciting thing about worship is a two-way thing happens. When we come into agreement with who he is, we understand, we can come into agreement about who he says we are. So if you notice with Ezekiel and Isaiah, and this happens a lot of times with the prophets, in worship, they find their calling. They find who they are. They get their commissioning. Isaiah, just afterwards, and you can read this again in Isaiah 6, he suddenly says, woe to me, I am full of an unclean lips. And immediately God says, who shall I send to speak? He's understood his need. He needs to be cleansed. And immediately he's commissioned. In the very area that he gets his conviction of sin, his speech, he's commissioned. Oh, I'll go for you. Similarly, Ezekiel, that was Ezekiel's calling, his commissioning. He encounters the living God. He worships him. And in that, he is sent to be a watchman for Israel. And again, I think for us, part of our overcoming is when we know who we are and we know what we're called to do. So that's why worship is the key, because it not only reminds us with the truth and reality that he is always going to be praised. He always was, he always is, and he always will be. And the degree we come into agreement with that is the degree we come into agreement with who we are and who what we're called to be and designed to be. So if we are in a situation of desolation, and all of us can picture those times, or confusion, or, and it's dealt with a bit, we dealt with a bit last week, last month, whatever, chapter 3, even complacency after a significant victory in our lives, that's our most vulnerable place. If we come back into that place of worship, we will recover that overcoming spirit. We will recover the connectedness with him. We will recover the instant purity. It's a gift. Purity and freedom from idolatry is a gift. It's not something we earn or somehow muster up. We just receive it. It just happens at the moment of encounter. We are worshippers again. The idolatry goes. I know that for myself. I just touch him or taste him, and nothing else compares or competes. So the purity happens, and then the calling happens. So that's what I want to encourage us all with tonight. And now we'll have a little discussion, but I'm just going to pray, finish with a prayer on that. Lord, I thank you so much that you reveal to us that the centre of everything and the truth and reality is that you are the God who always was, always is, and always will be. How we know that is because you alone are creator. And every single other being or every single other part of existence is created. And that's the distinction. And so we worship you, Lord, and we pray that you call us more deeply into that place of truth and reality. And every, from our waking moment, all through our day, through our night, in our dreams, that you are the centre of truth and reality. And to the extent we come into agreement with that, is to the extent we come into that, the overcoming that you have for us and you've designed us to be. And I love the fact that the words they say are holy, because holy simply means so utterly and fundamentally distinct and different. And that is exactly how I feel when I encounter you, Lord. You are just totally different and other to anything that I am or anything that humanity is. And so we do worship you, and we do crave that encounter with you, and we do ask that we come to that place where we cast our crowns before you, and we come to that place of acknowledging who you are, and we give you honour and glory in our lives. Amen.